Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Kidney Compass. It's our first episode of 2026. I'm joining you here from World Congress Nephrology in Yokohama, Japan, with my podcast partner in crime, Brendan Nguyen. Brendan, it's good to see you again.
Thanks very much for having me. As usual, Shik, it's great to see you. And today we've got the great pleasure of having Vlado Perkovic on the podcast, who's just presented the two-year GFR slope data for iptacopan in patients with IgA nephropathy. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So I might hand over to Vlado, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about the trial and the main results. We've seen the proteinuria data previously published in the New England Journal, but you presented the GFR slope data just today. So tell us about it.
Thanks, Brendan and Shika. Great to see you both, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you again today. I'm very excited to present this data. I think it's really important data, and it's sort of a milestone day in IgA nephropathy. We now have an entirely new approach to treatment that we can use for our patients with IgA nephropathy. But to talk about the APPLAUSE trial a little bit, it was designed to test whether iptacopan is kidney protective in people with high-risk IgA nephropathy. We recruited people with proteinuria and eGFR above 30, the usual sort of trial design that is now sort of standard in the condition. And we actually identified a very high-risk population. The median protein-creatinine ratio was about 1.7 grams per gram, so very high levels of proteinuria. We recruited the planned trial population, and as you say, we reported previously that there was a 38% proteinuria reduction at 9 months. But the question, of course, is whether that translated into long-term benefit. Because we did recruit such a high-risk population, the placebo arm lost an average of just over 6 mils per minute of eGFR per year. So again, reflecting the high-risk nature of that population, but also just how important it is to find new treatments for them. And we reported today that in the iptacopan treated patients, that eGFR slope was reduced to just over 3 mils per minute per year. So a very big treatment effect, 3 mils per minute per year, difference between the two arms, roughly a 50% reduction, and much, much bigger than we were powered for. We powered the study to identify a 1 mil per minute difference in eGFR per year between the arms. So, you know, really a very exciting result with a bigger treatment effect than we'd expected. Equally importantly, and with very exciting additional data, was that we pre-specified a key secondary outcome, a composite of 30% eGFR decline or kidney failure, and that our endpoint was also reduced by 43% by iptacopan compared to placebo. So, you know, again, suggesting that that change in that difference in slope is going to translate into clinically important benefits for patients. So they're the sort of headline results from an efficacy point of view. The other critical element, of course, is safety. And so we collected very detailed adverse event data, and there was no difference in adverse events, in discontinuations due to adverse events, in serious adverse events, hospitalized adverse events. They were all comparable across the arms. And there was a numerically higher number of infections in the iptacopan treated patients, but all of those infections were able to be treated and resolved with treatment. There were no deaths at all in the trial. Again, so safety profile overall was very reassuring, and without any sort of significant excess in encapsulated organisms, which was the other thing we worried about with agents that targeted the complement system. But ultimately, I was super excited when I saw the trial results. This is a very big treatment effect, a very important treatment for our patients, and an entirely new, you know, treatment class now available to people with IgA nephropathy.
Fantastic. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations, Vlados. Very, very exciting. As you said, a big day for our patients with IgA nephropathy. And we've come so far in the last 5 or 6 years now, right, where we had no approved therapies. And now we have multiple new therapies with different mechanisms of action to offer our patients. And I think, you know, as time goes on, we'll learn more about combining some of these therapies. But in terms of, you know, the data that you've just presented and thinking about the new KDIGO guidelines that just came out a few months ago, where do you think you're going to see, you know, complement inhibition and a medication like iptacopan fall into, you know, these evolving guidelines that we have?
Well, it's wonderful to be spoiled for choice, isn't it? And, you know, finally, we are getting into that situation now in people with IgA nephropathy. I think, you know, the foundational, the background therapies that are non-specific to IgA nephropathy, the RAS inhibitors and SGLT2 inhibitors, remain important. And I think, again, you know, the rate of loss of kidney function in this trial population highlights how important it is that we think about combination treatments to really get that eGFR slope back towards the 1 mL/min/year target recommended by KDIGO guidelines. It was really exciting in this trial to see that although we had a relatively small population who were on SGLT2 inhibitors at baseline, roughly 15% off the top of my head, but even in that population, there was very clear benefit demonstrated. So additional slowing of eGFR slope, even in people who are already receiving the benefits of SGLT2 inhibitors, I'm suggesting at the very least those treatments can be combined. You know, we also did an array of other subgroup analyses looking to see if we could identify particular populations that did or didn't benefit. And the striking thing was the remarkable degree of consistency across those clinical characteristic subgroups, the MESTC score subgroups, etc. And we don't yet have any specific data about complement-related markers and whether there are complement-related biomarkers that might predict people who are more likely to benefit. They'll be important questions for the future. But at the moment, this appears to be a treatment that will be beneficial really for all patients with high-risk IgA nephropathy. Where it fits into the treatment paradigm, I think, will evolve over coming months and years as we particularly start to see data about the B-cell therapies and how they compare. It would also be interesting to think about how we might use these treatments in combination at some point in the future. But, you know, we're going to need a lot more data before we can really understand, I think, the risks, the benefits and any risks associated with using these agents in combination. But for the moment, it's another, you know, quiver in our bow. You know, the cost is going to be an important factor, and it will be, you know, I think it's already a limiting factor for the use of iptacopan to some degree. And I'd very much like to see the cost of this drug come down significantly so it can be accessed by large numbers of additional patients.
Thanks, Vlado. And, you know, you and I have spoken a lot over the last couple of months, or actually longer than that, about the differences between acute and chronic slope and total slope. That's been clearly important in understanding treatment effects for some of the non-immunosuppressive therapies like SGLT2 inhibitors and MRAs.
Yeah.
You didn't present those data yet for iptacopan, but do you think that understanding the acute and chronic effects are going to be important with some of these immunological therapies in IgA nephropathy, and why might that be?
Yeah, look, I think it's important in terms of being able to interpret the data. So you've mentioned SGLT2 inhibitors and MRAs. Obviously, with both of those classes of agents, we see an acute reduction in eGFR, which tends to bias the results of slope analysis against the drug to some degree. With steroids, we see the reverse. We see an increase in eGFR acutely. And that, again, we can spend a long time talking about why that might be, and I don't think we really understand that well. But clearly, that's something we have to keep in mind when we're interpreting the results of those trials. With the B-cell therapies, we don't yet have a lot of eGFR data, but at Kidney Week last year, the telitacicept data from China was presented. And if you look at the eGFR curves in that presentation, there was an acute increase in the telitacicept treated group compared to the placebo treated group over the first few months. And, you know, what the impact those acute effects of B-cell therapies potentially might have in interpreting the results are going to be important. It doesn't mean in any way that these drugs aren't going to be effective in my mind, but it does mean that if we're looking at 12-month eGFR, we might overestimate potentially some of the benefits there. So the longer-term data is going to be important. Again, I'm really excited about those treatments and what they're going to offer for our patients as well. But to fully understand the effects of all of these drugs, we've got to look at both the total slope effects, but also understand whether there's an acute effect and what that means for us. The exciting thing about the the iptacopan data in that context is that there doesn't appear to be an acute effect in the trial that we looked at here. The effects appear to be consistent over time, and the eGFR slope data looks, you know, pretty straight in contrast to some of those other agents, which may mean that the slope data are a, you know, better approximation of the true effect than it might be for some of the other classes of agents that we've seen so far.
That's really interesting. I'm kind of surprised by that. Are you surprised by that? I thought that I would have hypothesized that with complement inhibitors, there might be maybe an acute reduction in glomerular inflammation early on. Mm-hmm. What did you think when you saw that?
I was reassured. I was relieved, to be honest, because it made interpretation of the data easier. And it's a complicated area that we don't understand much about. You're right that just a reduction in glomerular inflammation, in, you know, mesangial inflammation, may lead to changes in glomerular perfusion acutely that are reflected with acute increases in eGFR with some of these treatments. That may be part of why we see increases in eGFR with corticosteroids, but it might also be partly muscle effects of those agents. And of course, you know, we've talked about that a lot in the context of GLP-1 receptor agonists. But, you know, I didn't have particular expectations, I think, with regards to whether or not there'd be an acute effect here. As I say, I was sort of relieved because it makes interpretation easier. But it just means we need to keep that in mind when we're comparing these different agents to each other.
You know, Vlado, as we're thinking about complement and other glomerular diseases, I think we've always thought about them in a specific way as, you know, immunologic. And then we get to IgA nephropathy. A lot of people place complement inhibitors sort of at hit 4. But the more we learn about complement, they're involved in immune complexes, which is, you know, much earlier in that cascade. And yet we've got other classes of drugs that are, you know, hit 1 or almost pre-hit 1. So I'm wondering, as you're sort of thinking about, you know, we have these drugs hopefully becoming available, and we have other drugs that, you know, address other parts of the pathogenesis of IgA nephropathy. Given the data and given your understanding of the mechanism of action, do you think that we should be using complement inhibitors alone in terms of immunologic therapy plus, let's say, RAS, SGLT2 inhibitor, ERA, MRA? Or do you think we're still going to need something else? Like, are we going to need a little bit of steroids plus a complement inhibitor? Are we going to need B-cell therapy or, you know, budesonide along with the complement inhibitor? Because as you said, you know, you saw a great slope effect, but is it getting us where we need to be in and of itself? Or do we need to be thinking about, you know, some novel ways of combining these immunologic therapies?
There are so many elements to that question, Shika. I could probably spend hours talking about it. But one of the most
we have time.
One of the most interesting questions we got asked after publishing the proteinuria data from iptacopan was, well, did you have a look at what happened to galactose-deficient IgA? Did galactose-deficient IgA levels drop? Now, if, as we'd thought, complement was involved mostly in the glomerular inflammation hit 4 piece, then you wouldn't expect an effect on galactose-deficient IgA. And I don't know whether there is one yet. We're going to look at that data at some point. But imagine if there is. I mean, what would that mean for the way we think about the pathophysiology of the disease? We'd have to reconsider, I think, some of those questions that you've rightly posed. So I don't think we know the answer to that yet. And it could well be that there are other elements of the process. It's, you know, this may be one of those scenarios, again, where the more we learn, the less we know, with certainty at least. And we have to reconsider some of those fundamental assumptions about what we know about the condition. In terms of what that means for how we might use the drugs together, I think it's very early days. And in particular, it makes a lot of sense to use drugs with complementary actions to each other. And, you know, in that sense, B-cell therapies, which can help you with, you know, the earlier hits with the immunoglobulins combined with complement inhibitors, which target the glomerular effects, have an innate attraction to them. But whether that combination is effective an additive in its effects, or whether it's safe, remains to be determined. If we start to address multiple elements of the immune system, what will that mean for the risk of infection and other adverse outcomes? I don't think we know. So we need a lot more data from that point of view, but I think it's important equally to recognize that if we take the average patient, not the worst, but the average patient enrolled in APLAUSE, they had roughly 2 grams a day of proteinuria, 1.7 grams per gram, roughly 2 grams per day, perhaps a bit more. If we want to get them down to below 300 grams of proteinuria a day, which is our target, we need treatments that are going to reduce proteinuria by about 90%. Now, iptacopan reduces proteinuria by 40% and give or take, and it slows EGFR decline by about half, which is great. But we need to slow EGFR decline by another 2/3 if we're going to really minimize the risk of these patients. So, this is where I think combinations with SGLT2 inhibitors, perhaps endothelin antagonists is important, and perhaps B-cell therapies. I mean, it may well be that in people who are starting with high levels of proteinuria, we need 3 or 4 classes of agents. It could be if we can get to a stage where we're able to diagnose people early when they've got half a gram or a gram of proteinuria, then perhaps 1 or 2 drugs might be enough. But I think with the participants in the trials that are being done today, we really are likely to need combination therapy.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head here. I think we forget sometimes how heterogeneous IgA nephropathy is. And then we also have to keep in mind that we're enrolling prevalent patients into these trials, right? And so although I think in APLAUSE, the average time from biopsy was shorter. It was only like 1.5 years or so compared to several of the other phase 3 trials.
Much more incident population, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, but still, when you have that brand new diagnosed person in front of you, how do you apply the trial level data to these patients? And to your point, if we diagnose these patients earlier, hopefully we're not waiting till they have 2 grams of proteinuria. And if we treat them early, just like with SGLT2 inhibitors and in our CKD patients, maybe we're going to have a larger effect and see results sooner. And maybe we're not going to need to keep them on these medications forever. We're not going to need to do 3 or 4 drugs. But I think the other question that inherently, we talk about this with all of the therapies that are now approved is, well, how long do you have to be on these drugs? And I know, we have 2-year trials, so we don't have longer term data right now. But do you have any, insight into when you stop a complement inhibitor such as iptacopan, are we seeing, the proteinuria go right back up? Are we seeing the GFR start to decline, or is there any sort of legacy effect?
This will be an important sort of subsequent analysis that's limited in terms of its, I guess, robustness by the fact that the patients we'll be looking at will have discontinued for a reason. Often disease progression is the most common cause for discontinuation. People who met pre-specified, rescue therapy criteria. But it still will be very important data, as will be the data from the open label extension trial of this agent and the other agents that we're looking at with IgA nephropathy. That will be really, I think, informative, but we're probably going to need to do some additional studies about longer term treatment, because I think there are limits to the information that we can get from those sort of studies. But I completely agree, with the point you've made there about those sorts of questions being important. I think one of the other ripples out from the trials that are reporting at the moment, including this one, is the question of whether we're really biopsying patients too late and diagnosing people too late. And, in many parts of the world, people have been using thresholds of 1 gram of proteinuria or per day or more or less to biopsy patients and saying, well, if you've got less than 1 gram, you're low risk. Well, we know that that's not true anymore if you've got IgA nephropathy. So I think one of the implications of all of these trials is we're going to have to be much more inclusive in terms of thinking about which patients might need a kidney biopsy, and particularly for young patients who might only have mildly elevated proteinuria. I think we need to be considering biopsying those patients early so that we can make the diagnosis, particularly if it's IgA nephropathy, and get them onto these treatments before they progress to an extent that they need, the whole kitchen sink thrown at them.
Well, this is fantastic. You know, it's so great to be back with you chatting again, Shika, in Yokohama. And Vlado, always a pleasure to chat to you. Thank you very much for joining us, everyone, on this episode of Kidney Compass. We'll be recording several episodes from Yokohama in Japan. So feel free to keep an eye out on some of the other coverage we have for the late breaking trials. And we look forward to speaking with you soon.